good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mo from Drunk on VHS. You all know me, but some of you don't. And those people who don't are probably the listeners of the Cult Couch. A couple of my neighbors from the north sat down with them recently, took a little break from my mental health series of podcasts with the one and only Mr. Bob Doom to have a little discussion with these Canucks about, you know, Mark Lester films. That being Mark L. Lester, the director of such sterling classics as Commando and not the lead actor in Oliver. If you don't follow these guys on Twitter, they're at The Cult Couch. All their information is on there. If you want to follow them individually, Ryan or David, you can find that information at The Cult Couch as well. They have a Facebook page, I believe. Just search The Cult Couch. They're good guys. Little, you know, I don't know if they know what it's all about, but I enjoyed talking with them. And here's the ensuing result. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Holy shit. I have got a show for you today. Extra special show. We've got a couple of Canadians in the house. Hey, Canadian, say hi.
Hey. What's up,
mate? Oh, yeah, eh? So it's an extra special show for you tonight. Today it is Drunk on VHS versus The Cult Couch. How the hell did that happen?
I have no idea. We both like Commando, I think. Yeah.
We both go Commando?
Together.
It really does. As proof during Lesterfest last Saturday.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's get right into it, because why not?
I have a quick question about Lesterfest 98.
Why did I call it Lesterfest 98?
I get the Lester part. I totally get the fest part. What's 98 all about?
98 is a very special year in my life, and so every time I name something, no, actually, in actuality, me and a buddy and a bunch of friends of mine back in the day did this video called Hooligan 98, where we basically just snagged up a bunch of video clips from all these movies and kind of spliced them all together. And it was done really cheaply and terribly, really poorly made. And we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun with it.
I'd expect nothing less or more than poorly made.
Yeah, exactly. And we named that Hooligan 98, and basically the end. So from then on, I've been calling everything 98 since then. So that's why. Yeah. So Lesterfest 98. I spent the entire day watching Mark Lester films, so it makes sense. Lesterfest 98.
Yeah. The Lesterfest I had no problems with, but I was almost sure that there was some sort of I was hoping there was an inside thing that I wasn't getting.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, there was. It's just something that you never would get.
Yeah.
Because there's approximately 5 people on the planet who would understand what that means. You know, it's how I work. I like to alienate my audience and make sure that only 5 people in the entire world will ever understand what I'm saying at any given moment.
Yeah, we're into alienating our audience as well. We decided to talk about Saw movies for our very first episode, so... We were weeding out the non-believers right from the get-go.
Exactly. That's the way to do it. Yeah, I mean, like, I like to consider myself so niche that the niche people think that I'm a little too specific for their taste.
Yeah, well, that's a good place to be.
Yeah.
And if you only want 5 people in the world to care about your podcast, getting Canadians out there is a good start.
So on today's episode, we are discussing Mark Lester films. The films of Mark. Well, let's get this straight. It's the films of Mark L. Lester, not the actor Mark Lester who played Oliver.
Not that guy.
Yeah, as so many people.
Do we know what the L is?
Liberace.
Yeah, LaFontaine's good. Yeah. Wow, Mark Lester. Yeah.
Mark.
I initially thought of talking about his films just because of my love of Commando, and I at the time didn't even really know that Firestarter and Showdown in Little Tokyo, which I had seen, were directed by him. So
yeah, let's get this
you know, out in the open first. This is not my idea. This was your idea, and I completely hijacked your show.
Well, blame Canada is essentially what you should do. If you're going to listen to this, you like Mark Lester, or you're interested in Mark Lester anyway. But if Mark Lester is somehow ruined for you, blame Canada.
Well, that was the point I wanted to get across. I wanted to make sure that if by the time this is over, you have no interest in Mark Lester films anymore, it is your fault, not mine.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll take the onus for that.
You better. All right. So, have you guys introduced yourselves yet?
Well, my name is Ryan.
My name is David. We're from Winnipeg in Canada. Yeah. If you don't know where Canada is, look up.
Then you're probably American.
Yeah. Well, no. If you're somewhere other than the States, you might have to look sideways or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, that's a good point, guys, because I have a worldwide viewership on this. You know, I've got 24 listeners in Beijing, China.
You do? Holy cow.
Yeah, I did. I check the I like to check the stats on my show every now and again, and sometimes I'm more, I mean, since I've kind of developed a little bit of a following on Twitter, like I'm not so freaked out by when I see stuff like Australia or like the UK, you know. But before I was even known on Twitter, yeah, I had 24 listeners in Beijing. I'm like, what the fuck is this? I loved it though.
When we created the Facebook page for our podcast, our first 5 or 6 likes on the page were non-English speaking people.
Yeah, they were like Czechoslovakian or something.
Yeah. But we were just convinced that they liked our page because they didn't know what it was. And that was essentially what was going to make up our fan base, is people who hit like because they were confused.
Well,
or just wanted something to show up in their timeline.
when I first created the page for Drunk on VHS, I'm 100% certain that the majority of the, you know, my first bunch of likes were all either friends of mine or people who just loved the fact that the word drunk was in it. Because I definitely get a lot more attention for the drunk part than I do for the VHS part.
Yeah, well, I followed you on Twitter initially, equal parts because of the drunk and the VHS part.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that there is some kind of, you know, but I definitely think it was the VHS part that kind of launched me on Twitter, so to speak.
Yeah.
Now that I rule the world, apparently.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the cult couch moniker has gotten us a lot of followers who are just kind of lazy.
Yeah.
And are members of cults. Armenian or Czechoslovakian cult.
Nice. The cult of couch. All right. So where do we want to start with this Lester Fest? Because there's a couple of spots we could start. I mean, he has a lot of movies.
Yeah. He does. I wouldn't mind just starting by reading the tagline from Truck Stop Women.
Go ahead.
Truck Stop Women from 1974 was one of the first movies he directed. I wasn't able to get a hold of it. You guys haven't seen it, eh? So check this out. double clutching, gear jamming mamas who like a lot of hijacking by day and a lot of heavy trucking by night.
Wow.
No rig was too big for them to handle.
That sounds like my kind of woman.
Man. Yeah, like my search for this movie is going to be nonstop until I find it.
I don't care about that movie. I want those women.
Well, yeah, but to get the women, you got to get the movie. They're all dead or 60 by now. Yeah.
That's fine. All the hottest women are 60 now anyway. Whoa,
probably
Jesus.
the earliest movie we all saw would have been Roller Boogie, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? It's funny, though, because that was one of the few movies that I didn't actually prepare, because I wasn't actually expecting either of you guys to find it. So, I mean, we can glance on it. I kind of don't really remember that much about it. I just remember there's a lot of bright colors, and it's really silly.
It's very bright.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like a cartoon.
It is a cartoon.
It's a cartoon with the Blair roller skating vehicle.
Yeah, exactly. Just fucking insane. But anything with Linda Blair from back then was pretty fucking nuts. I mean,
she's a terrible actress.
I never understood the love affair with Linda Blair. I really never did. I mean, I met her once. She was a bitch. You know? Wait, hold on. Should I bleep that? Because that might be slanderous.
Yeah, I think maybe.
Nah, fuck her.
But then again, she said all those awful things about Christ. Yeah, she did.
Wait, she said.
I guess her appeal comes from the fact that she was like a child actor.
No. Let's get this straight. Her appeal comes from the fact that she willingly showed her breasts a lot in the 70s.
Yeah, that is true. But her mainstream appeal was because of The Exorcist, mostly,
True.
Which was, I mean, I think people give a pass to child actors, and then the majority of them, when they grow up, are just awful. And mostly crackheads.
Well, you gotta give credit to any child actor who could so brilliantly deliver the word cunt in a line.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Wasn't there a bit of a controversy, though, because she got nominated for Best Actress, so then they found out that all the dubbing was not was done by some dude.
Well, of course. And did you hear you mean when she was channeling the demon?
Yeah.
Like, she was nominated for the Oscar because of her like vocal acrobatics, able to like speak in a low tone.
Oh, I don't know.
Wow. No, I dug Roller Boogie though.
Oh yeah, no, it's a fun movie.
There was a guy in it that reminded me of you.
Me?
Yeah. Gemma Delaney.
Oh, yeah.
He looks like sort of a cross between Robbie Coltrane, Dom DeLuise, and you.
That's almost insulting.
No. He was a hardcore jammer.
Let's move on. Let's talk about Class of 1984.
Let's talk about the Class of 84.
Yeah, Class of 1984 is fantastic.
Oh, God. You know, I had seen Class of 1984 many, many moons ago back. Like, it's funny, I was on a huge trauma kick, like, in, like, the late 90s, and I actually watched Class of 1984 thinking it was Class of Nukem High. and definitely wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was young and dumb and full of cum.
Oh. Yeah,
yeah, now I'm old and smart. And full of farts.
I love the soundtrack to Class of 1984.
Really? Because yeah. I fucking hated it.
Well,
you know what? I'm sorry. Let me correct myself. I hated the Alice Cooper song in Class of 1984.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I'm not a big Alice Cooper fan myself. But
what is a nightmare? Like,
Ethan do a hangover and
what was it like?
Changing a dream into a nightmare.
Yeah, like his entire career consists of throwing the word nightmare into songs.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm gonna look that up because that song needs to be played.
Yeah, I think probably Nightmare is even in the title of that one.
No, it's called I am the Future. I am the Future.
Oh, yeah. I am future.
All right, let's let this load. You know what one of my favorite parts of Class of 1984 is I don't know if you realize this or not, but the main character, you know, Timothy Van Patten, he went on to like, he kind of stopped working, like he stopped acting in like the early 2000s and started directing a lot of like television, and he's directed shows like for like some of like the best series on television. Like, he's directed episodes of The Wire. He directed episodes of, I'm trying to think of what else he directed. He's done a lot of awesome shit, you know, and as far as his acting is concerned, he's done a lot of really awesome stuff acting as well. But I mean, but his directing stuff, he did two episodes of Game of Thrones. He did like, yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. He did seven episodes of Boardwalk Empire. You know, he did an episode of Deadwood. I mean, like, he's done a lot of TV. And it's pretty funny to think that, you know, here's fucking Stegman.
Oh man, I love Stegman.
He is one of the greatest cinematic villains of all time. But of course, you know, they do kind of ruin Stegman's thunder about halfway through the movie, though. You know, when they reveal that really he's just like a poor little rich kid with daddy issues, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that makes him more hateable, which is like,
yeah, totally.
By the end of the movie, I so badly wanted Perry King to kick his ass. Like,
yeah,
I really wanted a bad guy to get his, and just him a little brat, like, just added to the hatred. That was great.
Oh, well, yeah, no. I agree. I agree that as far as, like, hating a character is concerned, although the problem is that with, like, the whole, like, little piano stunt that they did in the classroom and, you know, like they were, like, they were obviously trying to build him up to be like this redeemable character, and then they kind of throw him over the edge with that whole poor little rich kid thing.
Yeah, his knowledge of classical music is like, it's trying to show you like all of the opportunities that he's wasted by being such a like a completely different way than like class of 1984 did, where there also was like a very talented classical musician, and it was. She wanted to give up that life for like the bougie lifestyle, which was sort of like, it was made out to be like a really noble thing to do, and that like rebelling against authority was noble. But the class of 1984 is like the exact opposite. It's like, if you know how to play classical music, you should take advantage of it. You shouldn't like torment your teacher until he kills you.
I disagree. I think you should definitely torment your teacher until he kills you.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, I was killed 3 times in high school.
Well, you're feeling much better now.
Nah. All right, here, listen. Here's Alice Cooper's I Am the Future with a little, this is the official video, too, so it has a little bit of the movie in it as well. So check this out.
You're going to turn people off this film.
Maybe, but let's put it this way. If they weren't turned off by this video, they'd be turned off by the end of the opening credits anyway, because the whole song plays.
Sorry, but it's so much better from that point forward.
Never come here again, and I'll kill you. I swear. You're mine, asshole. All mine. And the future. You hear that?
And the future. Fuck.
I'm gonna pause it for a second. I love how through the entire movie he just repeats the line "I am the future" over and over. Like, do you remember the scene like right before they kidnap Norris's wife? How like they're following him down the hallway, and like and all Stegman's saying is "I am the future. I am the future.
Yeah, just like right over his. Right,
yeah, yeah, just he's just he's walking sideways, like up in his face. Is "I am the future. I am the future." Oh man. Stegman, you son of a bitch.
What's the matter with you? What's the matter with me? What's the matter with the matter?
All right, here we go. It's the worst song ever.
Fuck yeah, it's awful.
I love what you're trying to sing here.
Oh no, I sang it best. I didn't get that shit catchy, but not in the right way. Like, catchy like the D. Yeah.
I'm just gonna play through the chorus.
Yeah. If you could sing over the whole thing, that would probably make it better.
Probably. That's good enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's more than good enough.
But
people listening can't actually see this, but Mo is totally fucking rocking out to that song.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I'm all about the... Well, I was actually watching the video, which was showing clips from the teenage head scene, and you know,
I mentioned the Canadian content. Well, hey, Michael J. Fox, he gets shivved, and Act Blackman.
Yeah, he really does. He gets
Detective Stuwinski. I think the movie was like filmed in Toronto too, so it can appropriately be called a Canexploitation movie.
The best thing about Michael J. Fox, or as he's referred to in this movie, Michael Fox.
That's him.
And by this point, I think this was his second or third film, like real film, not like, you know, like he did a bunch of like TV movies and stuff.
Right. Theatrical release.
Yeah. It looks like it was his second theatrical release behind Midnight Madness. Now, Midnight Madness came out in 1980. He was 21 playing a 12-year-old. All right? And he looked 11.
So now he's 23.
Yeah, he was 20. He was 21 playing a 12-year-old. He looked 11. In class of 1984, which came out in 1982, he was playing. I don't think he was supposed to be a senior. Was he supposed to be a senior?
I don't. Well, he was in the same classes as Stegman.
Yeah.
I'm sure Stegman was held back a little bit. I don't think Stegman was never in the right class. No.
Well, although Stegman was in the right class, his entire gang of Nazi thugs weren't.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So let's say he was supposed to be 18, which I don't believe for a second.
No, he's probably younger.
He's 23 at this point, and he looks 11.
Yeah. He looks 11 for another 20 years, another good 20 years.
He didn't start not looking 11 until he caught that Shaken disease, you know? I mean, it's basically like that's when it kind of fell apart for him, you know?
Yeah, well, understandably so.
Yeah, you can't really blame him for that. Yeah.
No, I guess not.
He actually fought it when he got an incurable disease.
Well, he shouldn't have been sitting on all those dirty toilets, has
he? Oh, he spent too much time. He obviously spent too much time in America.
Yeah, that could be.
But I love Michael J. Fox in the movie. It's way too short, you know.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and he's just there to play the token innocent guy.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, he's there to play victim. That's it. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. But you find that because he's so like little and
soft looking.
Yeah.
Without
he's
a doubt.
Such a pussy. I'm
trying to think of when did he do Teen Wolf? All right, so he did Teen Wolf and wow, Jesus Christ.
Was Teen Wolf pre Family Ties?
No. Teen Wolf and Back to the Future were both 1985. So imagine that. Imagine you're Michael J. Fox. You know, pulling those two movies in the same fucking year, you know, that's pretty impressive. But yeah, I mean, by Teen Wolf, he was already like in his mid-20s and he was starting to finally look like a teenager.
Yeah, well, they did have to put a lot of like, he only started to look like a teenager when the wolf hair started to grow.
Yeah, I really like that scene where he pulls the chest hair out. I didn't believe that for a second.
No.
He's like, he doesn't have chest hair. He's a nymph. You know, I really love in Class 1984 when he finds, like, I love movies where the guy gets pushed and pushed and pushed until he takes out in revenge and, you know, like the Death Wish kind of thing, you know. But I love how, you know, Andy takes out the gang. I mean, like each death is just better than the last, you know.
Until
you get to Stegman, which is a little anticlimactic, but works. Yeah. You know,
so being hung over the band I thought that was pretty epic.
Oh no, it was awesome. Cool. It was awesome, but compared to a table saw death, come on.
Yeah, the table saw. My only complaint with that scene is that
they don't show enough.
Couldn't see what was happening between him and the table.
Yeah, there should have been blood. They should have pulled like a fucking like Sam Raimi, you know, and just had blood sporting everywhere. It would have been awesome.
Yeah, it should have been a bigger saw so that it like punctured his back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the blade should have come out the front.
Yeah, by the time he had the showdown with Stegman, though, I think he was pretty appropriately blood covered.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
I totally agree about the building of the feeling that for revenge in the movie, like it's so like what's his face, Roddy McDowell's character, when they skin his cat, and like, oh yeah, man, I wanted him to was bastards away. Like, yeah, the movie was really good at villainizing these kids. Like,
it's funny. I was talking about that, because obviously I live tweeted the entire day when I was watching all these movies. And I had mentioned that, you know, about how awesome that scene was where Roddy McDowell holds his class hostage.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, I mean that's like an Oscar worthy performance as far as I'm concerned. I mean that's
I was on the edge of my fucking seat during that whole thing. It was
seriously
actually tense in the middle of this stupidity, like. Yeah,
exactly. The movie's so ridiculous, and then that scene gets kind of pulled out of somebody's ass, and like, holy shit! Like, where the hell did this come from? And next thing you know, you're watching him hold his class hostage until somebody can answer, a question correctly. So he's like, see, it's not that hard.
Yeah.
Well, Roddy McDowell elevates everything he's in. Like, that's why him and Chris Sarandon eating apples is why I watch Fright Night.
Well, you know what? I can name a movie that he was in that he, that his being in it didn't really elevate anything, only because it's... Well, hold on. You know what? Hold on. Let me double check. I want to make sure I'm talking about the right movie here. Because if I'm not thinking about him, then I don't know what the fuck I'm thinking about.
I get my McDowell confused. I get Malcolm McDowell, Roddy McDowell, Malcolm McLaren. I think it's worth mentioning that they had to have a McDowell in both Class movies. Because Malcolm McDowell was in Class of 99.
That's right.
Yeah, he was. Maybe they just had a quota to fill, but Mark Lester really liked Scottish? Yeah, British?
Who, Mark Lester?
The always said Scottish to me. I don't know. But then, like, Roddy McDowell, he sounds super British.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he grew up in Britain, maybe. I don't know. But it's like the same big lump of crappy land. Yeah, they're all the same.
I can't think of the movie that I'm thinking. Oh, I remember what I was trying to think of.
As long as you don't insult, like, Argentina or Czechoslovakia. Yeah, Czechoslovakia is the greatest country. Yeah, because I don't think we have any listeners in the UK, so fuck those limeys.
Look.
But even if we do insult Czechoslovakia, I think even mentioning the name will sort of give us big ups, because I'm pretty sure that they understand the rest of what we're saying. No, I'm Brits like being insulted, from what I've experienced.
Wow.
Yeah. Especially you, kind
of
like Canadian.
Oh, you know what? I wasn't thinking of Roddy McDowell. I was thinking of George Lazenby, and he's not good at anything he does. So
you were thinking of who?
George Lazenby, the worst. The worst James Bond.
What? Is the movie you were thinking of that James Bond movie no one's seen?
First off, it's on Her Majesty's Secret Service, and I have seen it. It's awful.
Yeah, I've actually seen it too. I just keep forgetting which one it is.
Let's put it this way. It's the one where James Bond marries for some reason, and then his wife is kidnapped and murdered, and then he loses. So.
Wow!
Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, it didn't really elevate James Bond mythology that much.
Oh, by the way, the movie I was thinking of was Twin Sitters.
I've never seen Twin Sitters.
No, me either.
But I'll bet you, that's the movie you were thinking of that might have had Roddy McDowell.
Yeah.
Or was actually George Lazenby.
Yeah. It was actually George Lazenby that I was thinking.
The lessons we learned here is don't watch that.
Oh, you know what? You know what? Barbarian. You know what Barbarian Brothers movie Roddy McDowell was in? He was in Double Trouble, and he's actually really awesome in that. So that's fine.
So it supports the statement that McDowell, then he does elevate a little bit. Like, just being Roddy McDowell.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I'm sure there's exceptions out there.
Have you seen have you guys seen any of the Barbarian Brothers movies?
No.
You're missing out.
Should I?
Yes, you should watch them all. They're all completely ridiculous.
Anyone
want to
watch the movie?
You should start with...
Before we move on from Class of 84, the Stegman character is awesome because the way he says, I'm the future, and just the way he says, teacher, the way he says, teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Good Lord, like, never has one word repeated over and over made me hate a character so goddamn much.
Yeah.
Well, early 80s films of this kind, like, with marauding gangs of assholes, like the Warriors or numerous other movies that just like these characters are instructed to be as annoying as possible. And there's just something about the way people speak in the 80s that's annoying to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they're trying to be annoying, it's just like, yeah. They even with the cat skinning and the abductions and stuff, I'd still want these people to get fucking shot.
Yeah, that was what was awesome about it, because about 10 minutes into that movie, I wanted these kids to be killed. So by the time they had the killing, which was about an hour into the movie, I wanted these kids to fucking die.
Yeah.
And it paid off so goddamn well.
You know what's a really good... You had mentioned the Warriors. It got me thinking. You know what's a really good, like... analog for people who haven't seen Class of 1984. Stegman's kind of a lot like Luther, you know, in the Warriors.
Yeah, totally, absolutely.
And we'll get to him later.
We sure will. Okay, so that was Class of 1984, a pretty darn good movie. Yeah, I do have to add that
when I saw Class of 1984, I hadn't yet seen Class of 1999.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea wasn't really formed in my mind, but I had a sort of feeling at the end of that movie that everything would have turned out better if these like teachers had just been aggressive, militarized cyborgs. I was like, you know, like Roddy McDowell and Perry King would have had a much better time if there'd been some like cyborgs on their side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A little foreshadowing. A little bit of foreshadowing, actually.
Right.
Yeah, I give a full endorsement to Class of 1984.
I give a full engorgement to Class of 1984.
I got about a half chub.
Oh, I'm full chub. That little lesbian looking chick who played the nine instruments and conducted, you know, really gave me some serious wood.
Yeah, I think. Well, didn't we watch that together? There was no wood.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe we'll go with that. Yeah. Okay, so we got his next movie chronologically was Firestarter.
So why don't you take that?
Well, I like Firestarter, but it's no Class of 1984. Like Class of 1984 was freewheeling and fun, mm-hmm. and Firestarter is like it's an adaptation of a Stephen King story.
Yeah.
So there's a slow build, and I mean it's got a good cast.
Yeah, absolutely. Drew Barrymore at 11, actually playing an 11-year-old. Yeah.
Wait, she wasn't playing a drunken slut yet?
No,
that was next year.
Nah.
Martin Sheen is in it, and George C. Scott is pretty much that, and just that things blow up is pretty much the only reason,
yeah,
that I would go back to this movie. But yeah, George C. Scott as like an evil scientist, he's like trying to trick Drew Barrymore into like trusting him so he can kill her, therefore inheriting her fire powers.
Which makes a shit ton of sense.
Yeah.
Well, it's a Stephen King story.
Right.
George C. Scott in just about anything is a reason enough to watch that movie. I mean, it...
Yeah.
He's awesome.
Have you ever seen
It? Have you ever seen what?
Have you ever seen Rage? The movie he directed from, I think it was 1972?
No.
I don't think I have.
Check out Rage. It's he wrote, directed, and starred in it, and it's about him and his son who get like who live near like some sort of a chemical plant where the government's doing like weird experiments, and his son gets sick from it.
And
he picks up a shotgun and goes and gets some justice. And yeah, it's not too bad. That sounds awesome. It's basically a vehicle for him to like. He's like, I want to write and start a movie where I just kill a bunch of fuckers.
I preferred him in the big screen adaptation of Football to the Groin. my groin.
Yeah. He's a delightfully gruff man. I like watching George C. Scott.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys. That's pretty much all I have to say about Firestarter. Well,
I want to talk about George C. Scott.
Yeah, George, I like the fact that all the, like, agents that are sent after Drew Barrymore, they all fail because they are using, like, normal weapons and they don't wear any sort of, like, fire-retardant clothing or anything. They go in completely unprepared. And they bring in George C. Scott to, like, actually capture her because he's the only one who figures out, like, that he needs to assemble a team who have, like, fireproof clothes. and like use sniper rifles to like shoot her from a distance so she can't like get close enough to burn them. I like that there's a horse in it called Necromancer.
Mm.
I mean, the things to like about it are few and far between, but
oh, it's not necessarily that it's a bad movie, it's just a blah movie, you know. There's just so little going on.
It should have been
a short film. You know, I mean, it was a short story. It should have been a short film.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's really padded out. Like, it seems like a third of the film is David Keith, who I have to make sure I don't call Keith David because they're very different people. But
they're not.
Like, grabbing his head, Home Alone style, and screaming and holding his breath till his face goes red, and then getting a nosebleed. But yeah, that's about half of the movie, I'd say.
Hmm. Yeah, David Keith and Keith David, two very different people.
Very different people. David Keith is super white. Yeah. And Pete David is who I want to, like, narrate the documentary about my life.
Then that motherfucker walked into the store.
He's just saying that a lot.
His doctor told him that he should put on the glasses, but he didn't want to put on the glasses. So he body slammed him and said, "Put on the damn glasses."
Firestarter also kind of appealed to me just in the...
Because you're a pedophile?
Well, there's that. Like, I'm about the same age as Drew Barrymore, so it was okay for me to be attracted to her at any time during watching this movie, except now. Yeah.
Wow.
But, no, I liked it because there was, like, a small subgenre of films around the same time that, like, Altered States and movies like that, where it was, like, sort of Timothy Leary inspired, like, chemical experiments on people that, like, gave them special powers or whatever, and I dig that subgenre, and this is a part of it. Not the best one. I'd watch Altered States over this.
But. Yeah.
Well, another guy in a monkey suit.
Yeah. And William Hurt.
Yeah.
Did you say something about a guy in a monkey suit?
Yeah, in
Altered States.
Oh, yes, yes. I love guys in monkey suits.
Yeah. If you put a guy in a monkey suit in your movie, I'm there.
Am I what?
If you put a guy in a monkey suit in your movie, I'm there.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the movie idea that I had pitched last night on Twitter.
No, what movie idea was it?
Oh, it was a porn parody version of Battlestar Galactica.
Oh wait, I think I read this. You mentioned Katie Sackhoff in this at some point.
Yeah, I had casually mentioned Katie Sackhoff, and then one of my other Daily Grindhouse bastards, Doug, then proceeded to at mention Katie Sackhoff. He said, "Be a man." Yeah.
Well, what was it again? It was what was it called?
It was called Booby Star Tapastica.
And that
has
a monkey
suit. Sure. We need an Admiral Adama, so why not? I'm never going to be able to find anybody nearly as pockmarked as Edward James Olmos, so you know, I might as well use a gorilla mask. Like,
yeah.
We should skip the next movie
and talk about Commando.
And we should come back to it.
Yeah, I think that's we're gonna have so much goddamn things to say about Commando.
Yeah.
Do you want me to rant about why it makes no sense that you guys don't like FCTV now and talk about Armed and Dangerous?
Do it.
Yeah, you know, go for it.
Do it.
Armed and Dangerous. Okay. John Candy and Eugene Levy.
It's a great movie.
Okay. Well, yeah, I like both those actors. As John Candy is like a failed cop and Eugene Levy is a failed lawyer. And they have to, like, the only job they can get is with a security company.
Which makes no sense.
So it's basically like... It's basically like Police Academy, only you take out Steve Guttenberg and you put in John Candy and Eugene Levy, which sounds like an improvement, was it? Yeah. Well, you guys haven't seen it? No.
It's apples and oranges. You can't compare the comedy of specifically talking about the first Police Academy movie. You can't compare the comedy of the first Police Academy movie to the comedy of Armed and Dangerous. They're both extremely funny movies, but for totally different reasons.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Well, Police Academy is a little bit more of a screwball comedy.
And it's certainly raunchy.
It's an action film that's supposed to have funniness in it.
Yeah. You know, Police Academy, getting on that for a second, because I love to go off on tangents. Police Academy has one of the greatest, like, un-PC lines ever in it. The day before the big, like, driving test, Hightower admits to Mahoney that he doesn't know how to drive. So Mahoney, you know, says, well, you know, it's 11 o'clock at night or whatever time it was. And, you know, right. and Hightower just kind of gives him those big puppy dog eyes. And he just kind of looks at the camera and then kind of goes, well, sleep's for fags.
I totally missed that. It was the 1980s. Like, it was okay to say fags back then.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest, like, totally politically incorrect lines ever. And I love it. But yeah, but go ahead. Talk about Armed and Dangerous and why we suck for not liking CSCT or SCTV.
Well, as far as you guys not liking SCTV,
does that stand for South Canada Television?
No, a second city television.
I know. I'm making jokes.
You started in Chicago in your goddamn country, didn't you?
I don't have a country.
No country for old Mo. No, I mean, I don't have a lot more to say about... I'm not going to convert anybody to, like, liking SCTV by giving a review of Armed and Dangerous. I just don't understand how you can't enjoy the celebrity blow-up scenes with Joe Flaherty and John Candy, where they blow up celebrities. Dustin Hoffman, Meryl Streep blowing up. Blew up real good! It seems to me that this should be up your people's alley.
It's a very Chicago sensibility.
Well, but I mean, the SCTV show was all Canadians in Toronto. Yeah, I mean, well, except for there was a couple. Aykroyd's Canadian too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is. Yeah,
Aykroyd. I guess most of them were Canadian. Bill Murray was the only American on the cast. I think.
Was he a regular cast member?
He wasn't there for one season, I think.
Huh.
Martin Short.
No, he's
Martin
Canadian.
Canadian. Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't know. I think it's worth reinvestigating for you guys.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe I'll check it out. On your recommendation, I will watch a little bit.
It's worth a rewatch more than Armed and Dangerous is. Although, I'd say, like, for anyone who's a John Candy fan who hasn't seen Armed and Dangerous, it's probably a good idea.
Yeah, well, I own Armed and Dangerous.
He actually gives a decent performance. Like, he's kind of a straight man to Eugene Levy.
Huh.
Well, Eugene Levy is a really good fall guy. So it's a really great combination when those two get together, or when they got together, I should say.
Yeah, they were like, I don't know. I just always liked Eugene Levy. He had the best eyebrow acting, like the best comedic eyebrow acting that I can think of.
Well, because he has comedic eyebrows.
Yeah, I guess so. Just at rest, his eyebrows are funny.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then he does a couple things with them.
Yeah, he had twisted the things like nobody's been there.
Yeah, it's like Patrick Warburton in the live action Tick, where he sort of acted with his antenna.
Yeah, yeah.
Eugene Levy gets the same effects from his eyebrows. Yeah.
I have
Before we go on, I really have to take a big shit right now.
Yeah, I'm gonna pee after he shit.
All right.
So can
we
just take a pause for 5?
No.
Can we bring? Why don't you take the laptop into the bathroom with you and let's get this... I don't think the internet cord will stretch that far.
Oh, thank God. Go ahead, man. Go shit. I'll talk to Ryan while you're shitting, and then I'll talk to you when he comes back.
Fair enough. Okay. Be right back. Yeah, I'd be okay.
And now the entire world is going to know that you have to take a shit.
Yeah, Dave's currently pooping.
Congratulations, Dave. You're now human.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Like... He claims he's pooping, but I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it.
Oh, maybe he's just changing his oil and hydraulic fluid.
I think he's doing coke.
You know what? I'll have a lot more respect for him if he is.
Well, but I don't know. I'm done talking about Armed and Dangerous.
Oh, yeah?
I know it's probably class in 1999 time.
That would be next, yeah. Have you ever seen... Let's talk about John Candy for a second, then, while we're on an interlude here. Have you ever seen the John Candy movie Going Berserk?
Oh, man. That rings a bell, but I don't think I've seen it.
Oh, I bought it a couple of years back, and, like, I had never seen it. Like, I had never even heard of it. I didn't know what it was. So I picked it up. I'm like, fuck, you know, it had awesome box art, which, of course, is, like, the only reason why I buy movies. Well, sometimes the movie itself matters, but not often enough. But yeah, so I picked that up and picked up because it had awesome box art and because it had John Candy in it. And basically it's just about this like down and out guy who decides, you know, to allow like experimentation on him, you know, and they basically like give him like this drug. So like, you know, that it's supposed to be like a hypnotized thing and so that he'll do their bidding. And, like, it doesn't work. And instead of, like, doing what they tell him to do, he just goes fucking crazy. And it's hilarious. John Candy just goes completely bonkers. And it's great. It's really, like, it's one of my favorite performances of John Candy. Like wacky performances. Like, he does, like, fat guy funny really well. But this is, like, him actually doing, like, physical humor. And it's really funny.
Shit, I can't believe I haven't seen that. But, yeah, I'm going to have to check that out immediately.
Oh my God!
What is it called again?
Going Berserk. Bananas? Going Berserk. No, no. Going Bananas is a completely different movie.
Yeah, you're right. I confused that for a minute. Going Berserk.
I sense a lot of editing.
What's that?
I said I sense a lot of editing.
Yeah, well, I should hope so, yeah.
I may just cut this whole bit out.
The whole bit about us, like, talking about this John Candy movie that I haven't seen?
No, this entire podcast so far.
Oh, yeah. we haven't really said anything worthwhile so far. I mean,
yeah. Hey, we can't all be important.
No. Well, I mean, the most that I hope to get from this is that a few more people watch a couple more Mark Lester movies.
Good luck with that one.
Oh, it'll happen. I believe in humanity.
There's your first mistake.
Yeah. All right, my turn. Okay, tagging off. So, what are we talking about right now?
We were talking about how you're actually a cyborg. The first theory was that you actually weren't taking a shit and that you were actually refilling your oil and checking your hydraulic fluid. And then after that, we said we really hope that you weren't taking a shit, but you were actually doing cocaine because we would have a lot more respect for you.
Wow. Is my sort of like, your opinion of me is so low that if I was in the bathroom doing cocaine instead of shitting,
it would be improved. Yes. That's 100% correct.
I would seem a lot more badass.
See? Thank you.
Okay. Next time I'll do some cocaine.
Nice. Hey, hosers. Hosers is spelled H-O-S-E-R, right?
Correct. Yeah.
All right. Good. I want to make sure when I'm insulting you guys that I'm doing it right.
Yeah. We prefer hosers. No, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I don't really know. I don't really know any other.
There's only one insult you can throw at us.
Yeah, basically, it's like I can call you a Canuck, or I can say hoser, or maybe I can tell you to take off. I don't know.
Hey, you watch your language, sir. Well, the cyborg thing. If I was actually refilling my hydraulic fluid, that'd be a great segue into Class of 1999.
See, perfect.
I see what we're doing here. Now, Class of 1999. Holy shit.
Well, you gotta wait for Ryan.
Oh, he's coming.
Oh. I don't want to know about that.
Class of 1999.
Come on, guys. This is Bush League here. This is Bush League.
Next time we're on bed fans. I'm sorry. Hey, Andy.
I'm wearing a diaper. and we haven't even been recording for an hour yet.
Really?
We're at like 50 minutes.
Oh. Well, that's fine. I mean, we haven't even gotten to Commando yet. Yeah.
Exactly. Now is the time for Class of 1999.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now is the time in the podcast when we talk Class of 1999. Now, Class of 1984 was shot in 1982, so it was just a little bit of a look in the future. Class of 1999 was shot in 1990, so Mark Lester was really reaching.
He was speculating.
Yeah, he was speculating like crazy. Yeah. In his mind, in Mark Lester's 1990 mind, by 1999, America would be basically overrun with gangs of youth who have taken over big chunks of the city. And the only response to this would be to get free fire zones with an ATT each with wacky contact lenses and a bleached white mullet. Shit, yeah. Before we get into Stacey Keach, though, like right at the opening, an element that I love in science fiction. I think Escape from New York did this. But it shows you the updated map of America after whatever's happened has gone on. Like, you know, city names have changed or whatever, and there's packs of like roaming villains who like control certain parts. And yeah, there's like a vocoder voice guy who does this voiceover telling you like. That the students have basically taken over the towns, taken over all the cities, and that, like, police refuse to go in there. and kids still go
the areas school. Around high schools have become free fire zones.
Yeah. the thing that's most baffling about this movie is that they've taken over huge chunks of the city, but they still go to high school.
They go to school still, yeah.
Which doesn't make any fucking sense at all.
No, I wasn't nearly as badass as these kids are, and I still sometimes skip.
Yeah.
That was the only like problem that I had with this movie is, and it wasn't really a problem because you get over it really quick. But there is like a moment where you think, what the fuck are these punks doing at school?
Seriously,
like they're burning precious gangbang time.
You know, it's funny. When I was a kid, I didn't realize that the term gangbang meant two different things. Because I only knew one of the definitions.
I'm assuming it's the one that didn't involve a lot of dicks.
Yeah, it's the one that involved a lot of dicks. So when I would start hearing the term gangbang, like, I'm like, these guys aren't gangbanging, they're just doing gang activity. I don't, what?
Yeah, I think everyone had that moment where I think everyone initially thinks that that's what that means. I certainly did.
Yeah, like the cops were cracking down in LA because the Bloods and the Crips were holding giant orgies or something.
That's right.
They were running out of girls, you know? Or maybe guys, I don't know.
To get back. Like, there's only one, four to pass around between 10 guys. You've got a gangbang.
I never understood the whole point. I mean, I'm a big porn guy. I don't get the whole point. I never understood the whole point of gangbanging. It just seems like, I mean, more than three guys seems like a waste, you know? I mean, he only has three holes.
Yeah, it not only seems like a waste, but the more guys that you add, like, the higher the ratio is of male anatomy to female.
Yeah.
And it becomes increasingly less interesting to me.
Yeah, the less schlongs, the better.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I not only would I not really want to watch pornography that featured two males and one woman, but I would not want to be one of the males involved either.
Oh, open your horizons, expand your universe.
You know, if that other male was like, if it was Johnny Depp, I don't know, I might say yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. For me, it's Michael Fassbender. I'd pretty much do it.
I'd do anything for that guy. Michael F. Fassbender.
Yeah.
Wow. It's confessions on internet radio.
Yeah, man crushes.
What were we talking about?
Class of 1999. And I rudely interrupted you when you were introducing Stacey Peach and his awesome white mullet.
Oh, yeah. That's the first thing you see in the movie. That's the best part. It's like they do that stupid talking shit, you know, where they tell you about what's going on and how, like, the year after I graduated, everything went to hell. you know, I'm like, I graduated in 1998. I don't know what the hell happened with all these, you know, with all these stupid kids, you know, but I knew it went downhill afterwards. I mean, you got to think about it. It, Columbine happened and I didn't realize just how crazy it had gotten.
You graduated just in time.
Yeah, I graduated just in time. Anyway, but then the first, like, actual shot of the movie is Stacey Keach's silver, you know, like, pointed mullet, you know?
Yeah. Well, doesn't it sort of track up his rat tail?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It tapers. It tapers from his ears into a rat tail.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm already impressed and I haven't even seen his eyes yet.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a game changer. Yeah.
And that's when you realize this movie's special.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's literally like 6 minutes into the movie. No, not even
six. Like, that's like the first minutes. Like minute and a half of the movie.
Yeah, yeah, it's right off the bat. Yeah,
yeah, it's the first. It's the first visual shot of the movie. Hey, you want to hear something? You want to hear something funny? I was realizing, like, as I was watching Class of 1999, the whole entire time I was thinking to myself, "Where's Sasha Mitchell?" You know, he's the star of Class of 1999 2. And I realized that I had seen Class of 1992 more than I had seen Class of 1999.
Oh,
so I totally forgot who was in the first one.
Jesus Christ, you just blew our mind. We did not know there was a second Class of 1999.
What? It's Class of 1999 2, The Substitute, starring Sasha Mitchell.
It's not Class of 2000 or 2001, it's Class of 1999
2. No, it's Class of 1999 2. Yeah, I don't think Mark Lester doesn't have anything to do with it. That's probably why you didn't, you know, didn't
That's
really
exactly why it didn't come up, but it's, yeah, I should investigate. Is that worthwhile at all?
No.
No.
Well, maybe. It depends on how much you're willing to torture yourself. I mean, it's not a terrible movie. It's better than Pterodactyl.
Yeah, that's not saying much, though.
Yeah.
If I just turned a camera on and left the house and came back in 2 hours, I would have made a better movie than Pterodactyl.
Well, yeah, because your movie would have featured the Kraken.
Exactly. Yeah. There was no Krakens in that movie.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Class of 1999 because we have two more movies we need to talk about before we get to Commando. This thing's going to be like 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, that's true. The Department of Educational Defense.
I love the DED. I mean, seriously, there's something wrong with this country.
Yeah. Well, I just love the concept and thought it was hilarious that because of unruly kids, the sort of like teachers association turns to the military.
Yep.
And says, can we buy 3 of your killer robots?
Why don't you send some of your killer robots over here to as an experiment to see how they work teaching kids?
We need a history teacher. We need a gym coach. Do you have any killer robots?
By the way, would one of those killer cyborgs happen to be a really hot black chick? That could work. We need a really hot black chemist. You think you got one of those for us? Oh, Pam Grier. There you go.
Yeah, Pam Grier. I love the Pam Griers in this movie. Yeah, the Robo Grier in this movie. I mean, like, it only gets better as the movie goes on because she starts off and you're like, you know, she's a cyborg and she's Pam Grier, so you've already won me over there.
Yeah.
And as the movie progresses, she starts doing her a little bit of karate.
Her Grier Fu.
Yeah.
Pam
and
Fu.
And then by the end of the movie, she sprouted a flamethrower out of her arm. She sure has. And I went half chub. Before, and oh, Jesus Christ, I basically tore a hole in my jeans right there. Yeah, she's fantastic, and her flamethrower arm is amazing. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I jumped up when that happened.
That's like of all of the secret weapons. Yeah, hers is definitely the best. I mean, his missile, his rocket, little missile launcher thing. You know, the gym teacher's missile launcher is kind of cool, but it's not nearly as cool as a fucking Patrick. Huh?
Patrick Kilpatrick, one of my favorite names.
That's pretty great.
He played the coach robot.
Coachbot 9000. And then the other guy has like a hook and a drill, like a claw and a drill.
He's like a claw from like the claw machine you see.
Yeah, from like the game where you gotta grab like a plush toy with it.
Yeah, and after flamethrower,
it has a drill in the center of it.
Yeah, which was pretty cool. But after flamethrower missile launcher, I don't know. It was a bit of a step down for me.
Yeah.
Not to say I was disappointed because there was a cyborg with a drill claw coming out of his arm, but. I don't know. I like Class of 1999 in that it has no coherent message. Like Class of 1984, the message was that like kids are out of control.
Mm-hmm. There's no like moral of the story. It's just here's some crazy fucking people.
Everyone is awful and like these kids are terrible. These robots are not doing the right thing. And the joyous part of that is that I don't require anyone to survive this film. Because they spend half of the movie like showing how fucking awful these kids are, and then they spend the latter half of the movie turning them into the heroes. Exactly. Which doesn't make any fucking sense at all, but in Mark Lesterverse, it makes all the sense in the world. It makes perfect sense. I love that the cyborgs are sort of sadistic. Yeah, like they take a lot of pleasure in it when they're cruising around and like tormenting these kids like out of school, like The Pam Grier and Patrick Kilpatrick are in the front seat, and the old history teacher robot in the back seat, John Ryan, and he just sort of leans over and he like just laughs at the kid. Like, it's just like, because he knows he's going to kill him, and it just makes so little sense that cyborgs would be this joyous about murder.
Yeah.
And another thing I love is that these are probably like $1 million cyborgs made by the government. And the best car they could get for them was like a fucking Ford Taurus.
Yeah.
So it seems like $1 million, like killer robots rolling around in probably like the shittiest car your grandma probably has now.
Yeah, you figure they could do the T-1000 run and just go faster.
Yeah, exactly. But
they're driving around in a 1984 K car. Sad.
There's some great one-liners in Class of 1999.
Yeah, absolutely. The mind is a terrible thing to waste. Don't make me waste yours.
Absolutely. Now be careful. These things are like a bad, fucked up George Jetson nightmare.
every time they dispatch one of the robots, they have a fucking awesome one-liner, and I think it's an excellent...
It all has to do with the subjects that the robot teaches, too.
Yeah. It doesn't say like your history at some point. Your history, Mr. Hardy, is what the history teacher bought you.
Yeah.
Pam Grier gets, I guess I blew that course when he blows up the classroom with her in it.
Wow.
And then the coach bot gets, did you have a nice stretch, coach? Because they pull his head off.
I love the fact that the main character, whose name I didn't bother to learn.
Cody.
Yeah, thank you. I love the fact that he gets jumped out of his gang and then jumped back into his gang in the course of 5 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
Like, they show him he's all bruised up and like beaten, and then like 2 seconds later, like, his little brother's dead and he's like, jump me in.
Yeah, that was the thing. Like, they spent up till that point in the movie sort of demonizing his gang because they were all assholes to him. And then all of a sudden there was like completely 180 turnaround. They were the good guys all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And the two rival gangs then, like,
they come together
against
the robot.
Sanchez or Carlos or whoever the other guy was.
And then they all die.
Hector, yeah.
And then apparently they all die. You know, I mean, because at the end of the movie, it's just like the two of them. They seem to be the only ones alive. It's just the two.
Yeah, it's just the main guy and the girl, right?
Yeah.
The principal's daughter. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's just proof that it's always important to be the principal's daughter. You will always survive.
Or to be the guy who's sexually interested in the principal's daughter. That allows you to survive.
Too. Well, that depends. No. That one depends on what kind of movie you're in, because sometimes the principal will kill that guy.
Yeah, that's true. But the principal was a good guy in this, Malcolm McDowell. He was like trying to, he was the guy who was trying to stop Stacey Keach from continuing with the military robots in the classroom.
Yeah, when it started to go a little too far, he actually was the voice of reason.
Did you notice that everybody in this movie seemed to be a hemophiliac? Like all it took was one punch, and the person was just covered in blood. And nobody ever stopped bleeding. Like, it was always like, if you got hit, you were like bloody for the rest of the movie. You know, it's ridiculous. Like, the whole movie was just people getting beaten up and being covered in blood all the time.
Yeah, it's this movie, even more so than 1984, it just doesn't let up. Like, I recommend it, just even if you don't like any of the like story elements we've talked about, it just like keeps Sound and Fury in your face for like an hour and a half. And I don't know how anyone could be bored watching Class of 1999.
Yeah, I think we best described it as a mix between Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome and Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
There's a bit of Escape from New York in there, but yeah, like Fast Times, and yeah, a bit of the Warriors.
Well, I was hoping for a little bit of Escape from LA. You know, I was waiting for somebody to like surf over a wall, you know. Or...
Yeah, they didn't have the budget for that.
I guess not.
They blew it all on the awesome like animatronic/stop motion.
Yeah,
the coach plot at the end, like, it's a complete ripoff of Terminator.
Yeah.
There's some like very similar shots, and he's crawling out of the wreckage in a similar way, but it was really impressive.
Yeah,
this was the time before they could just get sort of like shitty cheap CGI made by two nerds in a basement. They didn't have the option, so the automatic go-to was the stop-motion animation. Yeah, you have to build it. Absolutely.
Well, I'm glad they did, because it would have looked awful if they had done it digital.
Yeah, absolutely. In 1990? Yeah.
90.
Like, I usually use The Abyss as sort of a marking point as to where, like, digital became viable as far as, like, animating something that was supposed to be, that you could believe was integrated into the scene.
Mm.
But, I mean, and that was a year before. I think The Abyss came out in 89, but that kind of technology was, like, not widely available.
And you actually had to pay...
James Cameron was the only guy for, like, 5 years who could do that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing what they did digitally with Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Absolutely, yeah.
How they put her into that movie.
It's like the biggest.
Did you miss my joke?
Yeah.
Did you miss
my...
Did you miss my joke there?
What was it?
About how they digitally put Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio into the movie.
That's not a joke.
No, I mean, like, the whole movie. Like, she didn't actually act in it. It was all digital effects.
Yeah, no, I thought you were referring to the like water monster that mimicked her face or whatever.
No.
But yeah, she is pretty much a. Has anyone actually seen her? No, I don't think so. Outside of a piece of celluloid.
No, every movie she's ever been in, she's been completely digitized then.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like Max Headroom. Yeah. Which is not a terrible thing.
Oh, I love Max Headroom.
Okay, I gotta pause this for a second here. I just realized this is a total fly-by-night operation we're doing here. I didn't bring my power cord for my thing, and it's got 20 minutes of battery life left. Yeah, I know. Fucking choke me to death.
All right, so let's finish this shit in 20 minutes.
All right, okay, I think we can do that. So, I think we've talked about Class of 99 enough.
Sufficiently.
And basically, like, Showdown in Little Tokyo and Commando are the only two that we really need to spend any sort of time on. Right?
Yeah, well, let's take 2 seconds to talk about Pterodactyl. Pterodactyl, it sucked. Yeah. The end. Okay, yeah, so let's go on to the... Coolio is awful in it. There's no other big names in it. There's, I think, one set of tits and, like, one kind of hot chick with a half shirt. It's nothing.
That's the thing. There weren't any tits. Like, no. I was waiting for just, like, they never actually showed, like, full-on tits.
It's a sci-fi original. They can't show boobs.
Yeah, and we were saying before, as far as sci-fi originals go, this is the worst one we've seen. And we've seen Monster Wolf. We've seen...
Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
I've seen most of them, actually. A lot of them.
Yeah, yeah. And this one was the worst.
One of the worst.
Sharktopus was downright Shakespeare compared to this.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I mean, like, this was getting to the point where we were looking at the graphics and we were comparing it to Birdemic.
Yeah, there was some of the pterodactyls looked like animated GIFs to me.
There was a lot in common between Pterodactyl and Birdemic. A lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is not saying much. Birdemic actually had more entertainment value.
Well,
Birdemic was sort of Pterodactyl was just sort of sad.
Pterodactyl was sad, and there's only one more thing I want to mention about it, and that is the use of, like, literary names for all the characters.
Oh, yeah, the Lovecraft, Heinlein,
Bradbury, Serling, Zelazny, Donaldson, Clark, Herbert, Burroughs.
Yeah, they sold so many good authors' names in this movie.
Who's the famous author named Bulldog?
Did I say Bulldog? but the character's name was, like, I think it was...
Zelazny was the one they said the most, and like every time they like named a character, I just got more and more angry. It's like you're taking these horror and science fiction legends and just dragging their name through Pterodactyl.
Yeah, a movie in which Coolio was the best actor and most well known.
Yeah. There was one. There was like 5 seconds in the movie I enjoyed, and that's when Coolio put on this visor and used this weird aiming gun or whatever.
Yeah, and then Pterodactyl, like, was eating a guy, and he was still alive a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the actual, like, the rubber Pterodactyl claws and stuff were really fucking cool, but they used them far too little.
Yeah, this movie's shitty. I have nothing else to say about it. Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah, Coolio put on that visor and was like, come at me, bro.
I think that was probably his line, too.
And I'm obligated to mention, you know, Tarbosch, my co-host, on Twitter. He is... at Ty Comeuppance. I have to mention his review of White Rush, which was something to the effect of it's really awful and it's Judd Nelson at his lamest. All right. So let's talk Showdown in Little Tokyo. Let's try to make it quick because we gotta get to Commando.
So Showdown in Little Tokyo is an action film starring Brandon Lee, son of Bruce Lee, who tragically died on the set of The Crow in the mid-90s sometime.
Yep.
And Dolph Lundgren, who's one of my favorite 6'6" Swedish action stars.
He's probably my favorite.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No, nobody in the world can sing Karate Chop Ice Blocks, drum solo, and infiltrate Olympic skiers' homes like Dolph Lundgren can.
Absolutely not.
Just for the record, if you Google every single one of those things, a video of Dolph Lundgren doing it is online. Just saying.
Good Lord.
I think my favorite story about Dolph Lundgren is one time his house was home invaded while he wasn't home, and they tied up his wife and kids, and they were about to rob the shit out of his house, looked at a family picture, realized it was Dolph Lundgren's house, apologized, and ran the fuck out of there.
Yep.
Yeah, that's all you need is a, like, security system if you are Dolph Lundgren's house, is, like, indication that this is his house.
Oh, without a doubt. He's he's terrifying, and I think he's a little crazy too. So I mean, it's like he's the type of guy who I would imagine if he got pissed off at you, he would find you and probably kill you.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like I think his character from the Expendables might actually be him in real life, not like a character.
Yeah, he just
showed up on set one day and you're shooting a movie.
I'd also like to mention that his accent seems to have gotten thicker over the years.
Yeah.
I can understand him a lot more in Showdown in Little Tokyo than I can in the Expendables. Like, his accent is thicker now.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
I don't think he lives in the U.S. anymore. I think he lives overseas now. So
make any sense? Who doesn't live in the U.S.?
You.
Other than us.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
We're ending up. I guess we're gonna end up not actually talking about Showdown in Little Tokyo because I have to mention my favorite Dolph Lundgren story. It's a quick one. Somebody asked him in an interview why he didn't do more superhero movies. Because I guess they wanted to know, like, he was the Punisher back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
He sort of, like, looks the part. And his response basically was, comic book movies are for kids. They're not badass enough for me to be in.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I mean, did you see that movie where he plays a drummer? It's a recent straight-to-video movie of his where he plays a drummer and he kills a guy with a drumstick.
No, but it doesn't. Shock me in the
flight. I gotta see the shit out of that movie.
Yeah, I'll find the name for you. Dolph Lundgren is amazing. He is absolutely one of my favorite like straight to video actors of all time. Like he
absolutely, and directors too, because some of the movies he's directed, Missionary or something like that, was just like it was fucking gold.
Yeah. Well, his latest was really Icarus wasn't that great.
No. But the great thing about his movies, especially the ones that he writes, is that he can't speak English that well. And he usually gets the bad actors. So it's him writing the script in sort of stilted English, directing these bad actors, writing a script or acting a script of stilted English. So the the output is just fucking gold. Like it is incomprehensible.
All right,
it's a pretty it's stupid.
What is?
It's like a buddy. It's like a proto Rush Hour.
It had a bit of the action like that Commando did. Like there was a few scenes where Lundgren sort of pulled off Matrix-esque destruction of 10 guys with one little burst of gunfire. And, you know, basically it was just like you were supposed to be bemused by the fact that Dolph Lundgren knew more about Japan than Brandon Lee.
Yeah, I mean, that was basically the big joke of the movie. Yeah, I mean, he basically, it's just, we got Brandon Lee, who's half American and doesn't know shit about his culture. And then we got Dolph, who's this big fucking Swede who knows everything about, you know, Japan, blah, 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 whatever. But that's not the point. The point is, shit blows up, people get killed, he fucking impales the bad guy onto a spinning fireworks board with a fucking katana blade. I mean, do you really... And then sets him on fire. Do you need anything else? I don't.
No.
Oh,
speaking... You know about that movie, if you're not interested in that movie, you should go fuck off. You should go screw.
Yeah,
you should screw.
And if that's not enough for you, then how about Tia Carrere's stunt double side boob?
Oh, those awful, terrible non-Tia tits. They were
completely. Even her hair was a lot.
Her hair was different. Like it's like almost like they frizzed up the stunt hair, so that it would cover her face. I mean, Tia Carrere has great hair, and here they've got this frizzy ass, terrible tit, chick standing in for her. And it's like, I mean, if you're gonna get stunt boob, at least make it good, you know. I mean, at least do like what they did for fucking Marissa Tomei in Slums of Beverly Hills. I mean, that was good stunt tits, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, speaking of which, that movie where he plays a drummer is called Command Performance.
You need to watch it.
It's great. So here's the tagline out of it. It says when a Russian premier is taken hostage at a rock concert in Moscow, it's up to a drummer, an ex biker, to save him.
Yeah, I'm there.
Yeah, totally. Speaking of bad guys getting impaled by the good guy in a Mark Lester movie, let's talk about Commando.
Commando.
Yeah, so I guess this is the Mark Lester film. This is the reason why I wanted to do my Mark Lester Fest. I didn't know Mark Lester Fest,
which is just as appropriate.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know anything about Mark Lester except that he had a big
Fuck with Lester, I'll give you the fist.
Commando. And I sort of looked into his filmography and I said, we got to do a thing on this guy. But Commando is the reason that we're all here, I think.
I was recently...
In mankind's history, absolutely.
I was asked recently by a few, well, more than one, actually, people on Twitter, like, what Mark Lester films they should watch. And of course, I'm going to recommend Commando, but I always tell everybody to watch Commando last. I mean, like, you shouldn't, like, Commando shouldn't be the first Mark Lester film you see, because you'll be completely disappointed by all the other ones, except Class of 1984. But Commando is, like, his, like, coup de grace. It's easily his best movie.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And not only his best movie, but like Ryan said, it's my favorite action movie of all time. When I'm watching action movies, that's the standard that I hold them to, is Commando. Because it has, when I'm watching an action movie, I'm not looking for an Oscar winner, I'm not looking for good acting. I'm looking for cheesy action and fucking awesome one-liners.
Basically.
And boy, does Commando have awesome one-liners. Yeah.
One of the earlier episodes of this podcast, we did an entire episode devoted to Arnold one-liners, and the Commando one-liners came up a lot. Like we talked about Commando pretty extensively.
I've actually ranked in my own mind some of my favorite Arnold one-liners. I have to say, I'll Be Back is number one for me.
Well, he says it in like nine movies, so.
What's that?
I said he says it in like nine movies, so it's, you know.
Yeah. It's his trademark. It's vintage Arnie.
Yeah, and that harkens back to the day. That's why I love 80s action movies, is because stars could have catchphrases that carry from movie to movie, and we just don't see that anymore.
No, it wasn't a big deal to be meta, and now it's supposed to be revolutionary.
Yeah, it's fucking David Foster Wallace's fault then.
Yeah.
So much to say about Commando. I mean, it's
a bad guy. The crew of bad guys.
Yeah, and I mean, like, we'll start with Bennett, because he's one of the most baffling villains in an action movie ever, because he's got Arnie just like a mountain of muscles, and his villain, like, his arch nemesis in this movie
is like a flabby
Australian.
He's a flabby, you know, middle-aged dude.
Like, in what universe, except for Mark Lesterverse, would this guy even, like, hold a candle to Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Well, he is wearing chainmail.
Sorry, go ahead.
I said he is wearing chainmail.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but I mean, I noticed while we were Lesterfest 98ing this movie, that there was a few people who sort of questioned Bennett's sexual orientation.
No, that was me. Pretty much from the first time I saw Commando, I was questioning whether or not Bennett was like a closeted homosexual. I mean, I don't have any problem with, you know, with him being gay. He's really effeminate.
Yeah.
You know, almost annoyingly so. And, you know, and like to the point where basically it comes down to Bennett, in my mind, is a closeted homosexual with some serious daddy issues, and he's taking the whole thing out on Matrix and his daughter.
Yeah, and the good thing for Bennett being a closeted homosexual is that at the end of the movie, Arnie fills him with pipe.
See? There you go.
I gotta bring up David Patrick Kelly as Sully.
Yep.
Oh yeah, who did not last long enough in this movie. I kind of wish that he did kill him last. Like,
you gotta do a little bit of background on that too, because like for people who don't know him by name, he played Sully in the movie. To be even more specific, he's the guy who Arnie holds over the ledge by his ankle, and then tells him that he lied when he said he would kill him last.
It's up there in one of the greatest one-liners of all time. This movie has like such a great concentration of some of the best one-liners of all time.
I cannot
love it. The let-offs in Team Bennett. Mm-hmm. Remember when I said I'd kill you last? I lied.
He's dead tired.
Yeah.
Don't bother my friend. He's dead tired.
Dan Hedaya. Dan Hedaya was fantastic.
Dan Hedaya doing his Scarface impersonation. wearing a tan suit and the whole Scarface thing.
Yeah, he looks like Scarface as a retiree.
Yeah. a little bit doughier Scarface. A bit, and a lot hairier.
Yeah. Say hello to my faggy friend.
But yeah, it's sort of the archetypal action movie, because the plot has been done 100 times, and it never gets old. Like, Liam Neeson did it in Taken. It was the exact same plot. Like, his daughter was taken by bad guys, and he went, and he had to go kill some motherfuckers and kick some ass.
It's a time-tested story that always works.
Yeah, like, this is the archetypal action movie that spawned 1,000 really good action movies in their own right, but this is the original fucking awesome arty vehicle that just, like, it always rises to the top.
Yeah. I especially like the fact that they establish the connection between Matrix and Jenny, like, so quickly at the beginning. Mm. There's, like, a montage of them eating ice cream and doing kung fu and feeding deer. And, like, in the space of, like, 45 seconds, you're given the whole, like, sort of, like, oh, these are really close people.
Yeah.
And then by 6 minutes in, like, that helicopter's coming, and the bullets don't stop flying.
Yeah.
Like, until the end.
Oh, and another great line that I totally forgot to mention, that they say in the beginning of the movie, and then sort of call back to you later, one of the when Matrix's house is originally invaded, and Matrix is gone, and the general shows up, and he says, what did you find in there? And one of the soldiers says, just bodies. And then later in the movie, they call back to it, and they go up to Matrix, and they say, hey, Matrix, did you leave anything for us? Just bodies.
Yeah. Yeah, there's calls and response. There's setups and payoffs. It's perfect.
Yeah, and another awesome action movie trope that I noticed in a lot of the explosion scenes, and this is one of those movies that was never made to be seen on, like, Blu-ray, because any sort of scrutiny, you can see
the guys, springboards,
like little dolls on sticks being blown up in front of giant explosions.
And springboards.
And springboards.
Yeah, there's a couple guys who, like, get grenades thrown at them, and they hit the trampoline a good, like, half a second before the explosion. Those are some powerful grenades.
Yeah, seriously. And that's what I love about this movie. It was a huge budget movie that went in theaters, but it has all the tropes and production values of, like, the shittiest direct-to-video B movies of today.
It was just just an attempt to, like, get as much of Arnold Schwarzenegger being badass into an hour and 25 minutes as possible, and it's wildly successful.
It worked.
Oh,
it
you know what scene of that movie is ultimately badass and, like, deserves mentioning because of how badass it is? The scene where they cut all the lines they cut all the brake lines and all the power lines on his truck, and he just pushes the fucking thing down the hill.
Genius.
It's brilliant.
Or the scene where he just, after he lets Sully go, he flips over the car just, you know, like it's nothing, which also happened in Showdown in Little Tokyo. Dolph Lundgren also flips over a car.
Yeah. The Wachowskis stole for the car chase scene in Matrix Reloaded, when Morpheus flips the car over, and then as he's driving away, he shoots the fuel tank or whatever from underneath and explodes, and that's his, like, weapon.
Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah. The thing about Mark Lester is he invented, like, his movies may be sort of, like, almost B-movie quality, and in the sort of zeitgeist of film today, they might be a little bit overlooked, but he introduced a lot of excellent reusable movie trademarks that we see in a lot of movies today, but you know,
I don't know if he invented them, but he perfected it.
Yeah, absolutely.
At least, like, for a while.
Okay, so I'm just throwing this out there. My laptop has 1 minute of life, so we're gonna sign off here.
Yeah, we should definitely end it now.
Fantastic! Thanks for having us on, Mo.
Yeah, thanks. This was a hell of a good time. The time flew. What is it? Have we been talking for an hour and a half?
Hour 45, it looks like.
We're at an hour 28.
Oh, okay.
Great having you on. Thanks for having me on. And
Yeah,
no problem. Yeah, and I'll see you on the Twitterverse.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, brothers.
Thanks.
Peace.
Hey, thanks. Hey.
Hey.
Yeah. So all right. Now, when we talk about Commando, you know what we're talking about.
Exactly. All right, guys.
All right, awesome, man. That was a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, man.
Peace.
Later.
So that was Drunk on VHS versus The Cult Couch. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you had a good time. I know I sure as fuck did. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, you can follow The Cult Couch on Twitter, @The Cult Couch. Also want to give another shout out. I don't know if I've
you know, I don't think I've mentioned these guys on air before, but they've been giving us a lot of publicity lately, so want to give a shout out to After Movie Diner. You can follow them on the old Twitter at After Movie Diner. Seems obvious. They seem to enjoy the show, so that means you should too. Assholes. Anyway, also, not certain if I've mentioned this in recent past, because I don't put out episodes nearly as often as I used to, but I am now writing for a couple of different websites online. One I mentioned a while back, it was Daily Grindhouse. They are now up and running, and I am now writing for them, doing movie reviews. So you can read my stuff there at www.dailygrindhouse.com. It is wildly hilarious, as you would expect from me. The other site I'm writing for now is a British site, so hanging out with some limeys on the interwebs. It's videotapeswapshop.co.uk. I don't have too many reviews up there, but I will correct that and get some more up to them. So anyway, that was our show. I hope you enjoyed it. So remember, you can visit us on the web at drunkonvhs.com. Email us at drunkonvhs@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at drunkonvhs or Bosch at Ty Cummins. On behalf of Bosch, this is Mo. Good night, everybody.